My name is Jeff Harbach. I'm the CEO of Coffin Fellows and the host of the Coffin Fellows podcast. This season, our podcast is produced in partnership with Mighty Capital and features different Coffin Fellows as co-hosts. In this podcast, we dive deep into the personal narratives of some of the most successful names in the venture capital industry. But we're not here just to explore their highlight reels, however impressive they are. From failures and formative learning experiences to inflection points and aha moments, we discuss the real, authentic journeys that each individual goes through to become the best version of themselves in order to best serve the entrepreneurs they invest in. Covering various themes in venture capital investing, we speak with the world's top leaders in capital formation, all from a place of authenticity and vulnerability. Together, we'll unravel what truly makes a great venture capital investor. Now let's meet today's host and their guest. All right, welcome back to the Coffin Fellows podcast. I am so excited for our episode today. Today we are joined by Rachel Springate. Rachel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
It's awesome to have you. So listen, Rachel is a Coffin Fellow from Class 25. She is a co-founder of Muse Capital, and she has this incredible background that I need to brag about you a little bit. So let me just read this. So Rachel's an early stage investor and leading business development expert in a niche focused on creating opportunities between startup venture and the entertainment space. She co-founded Muse Capital with her co-founder, and she focuses on all these different businesses that help connect people from the entertainment space to the technology space. Rachel, tell us a little bit about how you got into this and what you're doing with Muse Capital first.
Yeah, happy to. I guess I have a pretty non-traditional background into venture capital. I actually spent most of my career as a business development expert. I have deep relationships with Fortune 500 decision makers, athletes, sports teams, influencers, celebrities, and I've worked with them in a business development capacity, so typically doing deals between those groups my entire career. And then over the last 10 years or so, was doing it with startups. So helping these young entrepreneurs partner with some of these big groups to help create those transformative partnerships for them in the early stages of the business, when typically it's very hard for them to do that.
So Rachel, you've worked with some of the biggest Fortune 500s in the world, from American Express to Gucci to Google to Armani to British Airways and Jaguar and Ferrari and on and on and on, Chelsea Football Club. Tell us about what that experience was like first.
I started my career in brand research, and that work actually allowed me to build relationships with a lot of these marketing directors from the Fortune 500s. And then off the back of that, I actually ended up being headhunted by a luxury lifestyle group called Quintessentially. And if you don't know what that is, they're a organization that looked after high net worths. If you think of a Richard Branson in his hometown of London, he knows everyone and everything. But when he travels, outside of the country to Tel Aviv, to, Tokyo, to anywhere in the world, there were people on the ground that could get him anything and everything. And they actually hired me because of my brand connections to start the corporate division of their company. So instead of working with high net worth individuals, it was, Rachel, can you speak to Fortune 500s, their C-level, and tell them about our network and, do major partnerships with them. And I started that journey at the age of 23. Ended up kind of founding that division for that company and got to live and travel out of a suitcase for 5 years. I would go and spend 3 months in Milan, for example. And in Milan, you had the headquarters of Gucci, Armani, Ferrari. And I would work with the local team to help structure those deals and pitch those deals and then, leave them to do it and then move on and kind of build this around the world. And it was this role where I actually really built out my network. Like I said, it wasn't just brands. It was working with the music industry, working with celebrities, working with sports teams. I was very fortunate to be able to do that. And probably the most famous deal I put together was helping power the Amex Black Card. The supercard that could get you anything, it was actually getting our company to kind of power that with Amex and make it a reality across the world.
It's amazing. I mean, listening to this, I'm sure many of our listeners are thinking that sounds like the absolute dream job. And you were doing that at 23. How did you, you're a 23-year-old, fairly new in the business, working with C-levels at some of the biggest companies and corporations in the world. How did you feel walking into some of those boardrooms, or, you know, what was that like for you, kind of getting your footing and really finding your place in that role to where you gained confidence and were able to make the most out of it? And then what did you learn from that?
I think this has been a running theme in my career. It's kind of jumping in head first and being pretty fearless when it comes to these life-changing opportunities. I mean, you know, in my brand research role, I got the opportunity to, you know, take over an event where you had all of these huge marketing directors, and the events director basically had a nervous breakdown and left 3 weeks before the event. And I was kind of the intern at the time. And they were like, "Here, Rachel, can you take it over? You're the only one who could do it right now." And I was like, "Sure, why not?" And, you know, likewise for Quintessentially, you know, I knew I'd always wanted to travel with my career. I guess they'd found me because of my relationships. And I just thought, you know, okay, I haven't necessarily been in sales before, but now I think I can do this. I certainly do have these great relationships. You know, let's just keep building. You know, that division didn't exist. We had to, you know, really work together to just even create the business model for that side of the company. And, you know, 5 years later, it ends up becoming the biggest revenue generator for the entire business. And honestly, you know, at the beginning, I feel that I did have this like real self-confidence, I guess, and awareness that I was able to do things well. But, you know, it's tough. You go in there and you're certainly, you know, the only female in the room, certainly the youngest in the room. I won't bore you with stories of, you know, working internationally and going into, you know, rooms in the Middle East and people walking out on me because they were expecting a, you know, 40-year-old woman, and it was me at the ripe old age of 25. I actually had people walk past me, and I'm like, "Hi guys, I'm Rachel from Quintessential."
Wow.
So just, I guess, having that self-confidence to know that, you know, I could do this.
So I want to come back to this because I think this is important. And I imagine there's going to be some stories that you can tell us, some, you know, different stories that were very formative for you and your learnings. But I want to dive into this a little bit. The fact that you describe yourself as someone that had lots of self-confidence at the early age of 23 to 25, walking into these situations where in some of them, people would be, as you said, walking right past you. That confidence has got to come from within. And I imagine that's something that you probably gained as an infant and as a child and as someone that was growing up with amazing parents, is my guess. Maybe tell us a little bit about your early childhood and your parents and what was that, what that was like.
Sure. I think my favorite person in the world is my mum. My mum has a pretty incredible story. She was one of 10 children who grew up on a farm in the Philippines. She had not even access to hot water, let alone a really great education. And my mum is brave. You know, the one child of 10 who decided there's got to be more to life than living on a farm. So she ended up figuring out a way to get on a plane, came to the UK in her early 20s, and decided to take 3 jobs. She was a hotel maid, a cinema attendant, and a waitress, and just wanted to make a better life for her and her future family. And actually, while she was working as a waitress, she met a charming English gentleman who helped her because she was stuck trying to open a bottle of wine. And that was my dad. And they just celebrated their, you know, 39th wedding anniversary. And
Congratulations to them.
Thank you. And I think for both my brother and I, my mum, you know, really instilled in us, you know, not to take opportunity for granted, and that we literally had family members who would kill for the opportunities that we have just by, you know, growing up in the UK. And so, yeah, to make the most of them. So I think with that foundation and that upbringing, I was always just trying to be grateful for all these opportunities and trying to make the most of them. And I think that's honestly where my confidence came from.
Amazing. Tell me a little bit about your father as well. What did you clearly got your, how brave you are, how you make the most out of opportunities from your mother, who sounds like an incredible person. What did you learn from your dad as well?
So it's really interesting because my mom is definitely the center of attention, the brave one. You know, she'll walk into a room and light up the room. She'll come to LA and make friends with all of my neighbors. And my dad is, you know, very typical English gentleman, very reserved, but my rock, you know, my foundation. My dad was, you know, a very present dad who really encouraged me at school, and he would always be there. I think our family are very close, and I had my mom who kind of pushed me and my dad who was kind of my grounding force and my rock. And yeah, I kind of owe everything to them.
Thank you so much. That's amazing about your parents. They are just sound like incredible people. Tell me about your childhood and your growing up. What were some of the things that you were interested in? Were you always interested in technology? What were some of the things that really got you passionate as a child, all the way through kind of high school to even to college?
I think the running theme in my life is that I've always valued the importance of relationships. And, you know, I've got probably funny stories from my high school days or even in my college years of always being the one that was making friends with everybody. So, you know, even in my college days, my six closest girlfriends, you know, we'd go to a bar or we'd go to a restaurant or we'd go out and I would meet the owner and I would like to hear their stories and I would like to understand their journey. And they would just find it funny. You know, they're all drinking, having fun, and there's me kind of just sitting there, you know, listening to this person's kind of stories and hearing about their lives and
completely geeking out on their stories.
Yeah, absolutely. I just had this real curiosity and interest in what these people were doing and what they cared about. And honestly, that came from my mum. My mum, she would always host events at our house for the community and be very interested in what everybody else was doing and really become this, I don't know, center figure for our community. Probably comes from her.
I got to meet your mom. She sounds like an amazing, amazing person. Mm-hmm. Tell me about how you then got into investing and into venture. You met someone who we all know, Troy Carter, an amazing visionary, amazing individual, and an amazing investor. Tell us about how you met Troy.
So after my time at Quintessentially, you know, I realized I had this pretty extraordinary network at this point of these decision makers across different industries. And I just thought there's got to be something more I can do with my life than, you know, work for other people. And it just so happened. So I'd left Quintessentially and I was doing some consulting work in Asia. And a mutual friend of ours introduced me to Troy. And we were both in Singapore at the time. And I'll never forget this. We were having dinner on a beautiful rooftop and I met Troy, who at the time was, you know, he was Lady Gaga's manager. She was the biggest pop star in the world. And I just said to him, like, what's exciting to you? Thinking he, you know, mention a new artist. And he said, technology and early stage investing. And I was perplexed. I was like, oh, you know, tell me more. And he said, look, Rachel, I've been spending a lot of time in Silicon Valley. I've just written a check into this wonderful company you should know about called Uber. And I was like, what's Uber? More importantly, why are they letting you invest? And he said, you know, because of my network, you know, I'm able to help leverage my media entertainment network to help these companies grow. Hey, you know, you should spend more time in this space because there's very few people like us who don't just have the network, but also the business knowledge to, you know, really help these companies grow. And, you know, when you have one of those like aha moments in your life and you're like, wait, hang on a minute. I have this, you know, big network. What is this whole tech space? And he just really encouraged me to really look at it as a career path. And you know, I was very thankful to him. You know, we stayed in touch. We stayed close. I then became, you know, very dear friends with his partner, the Kaufman Fellow, Susie Roo. And yeah, just so inspired by him. I remember leaving that meeting, coming back from the UK, from Asia, coming back to the UK and being like, wow, what is this space? And talking to friends in VCs and startups and just trying to get my head around how it all worked. And, you know, for me, I was like, gosh, I think I could make a real difference to these entrepreneurs and groups, you know, with my own network. And so I think this was 2013. I decided to make a big move and moved to New York from London. And I started a consultancy, which was working with early stage tech companies and doing all their high level business development. So essentially leveraging my, you know, my network to help these companies, you know, with partnerships with, you know, big tech companies, with my celebrity network, or with a major brand. And I was doing that for a couple of years, successfully, I guess. I was working with a couple of clients that were in the music streaming space. This is just as streaming was coming into North America. And for that company, I helped, you know, get them their deals with music labels. I helped get a lot of the big DJs involved, like Calvin Harris, Deadmau5, Avicii, you know, all the big names at the time. But most importantly, integrating those technologies into, you know, Spotify and Apple, which were just launching at the time. And you know, I realized very quickly, I'm like, gosh, you know, what I'm doing is pretty powerful. I guess it's moving the needle. You know, the entrepreneurs were really thankful and, you know, said, you know, we couldn't have done what we did without you. And, you know, and it just really got me thinking, like, wow, I love this space. And I did know the venture community. You know, had friends at some of the very big funds. I used to get due diligence calls, you know, saying, hey, this company claims it has a deal with Disney, Rachel. Can you, you know, back channel and confirm it for me? And so, you know, I had an idea of venture. And then in 2014, I met a woman who changed my life, a woman named Asia Grazioli, who is now my partner in the fund. And, you know, she has her own extraordinary background, but the two of us were like, look, we've spent our entire careers kind of building everyone else's companies with this, you know, very unique skill set, which is business development. You know, what can we do that's our legacy? And we just thought to ourselves, you know, why is it in venture capital there aren't more people that are able to do the things that we can do? You know, why don't we keep doing what we're doing, but actually put some money behind it? And that was literally our entry point into venture. And that's how we moved.
Tell me about what it was like when you did one of your first deals, maybe as an investment, and you had to go back to one of the corporations or one of the, you know, relationships that you built over time and said, hey, you know, I have this this investment that we're looking at where I'm looking to make an investment. This is a great technology company that you might be interested in. You know, this is that network that, by the way, was doing business deals with you at a very young age. What was that like making that transition from having business development discussions to now bringing them into a discussion with an early stage startup that they have maybe never heard of?
So this is definitely a lesson for me. I think, you know, when you're moving between industries, you're certainly naive in terms of what you know and what you don't. And so there were situations like at the beginning when I was just doing the consultancy where I had such strong relationships within the entertainment industry, but not enough knowledge of technology and startups that I might go to an existing relationship where the technology wasn't quite ready. And, you know, I had a couple of instances there where I was like, wow, I really, really need to learn so much more about, you know, technology and how to vet it and how to understand kind of where this particular company sits within, you know, the competitive space. And yeah, there were mistakes made. And I think it was a real awakening to be like, right, you need to go and you need to go and understand, you know, how investment works, how to vet these companies, because And luckily for me, my relationships were strong enough that, you know, it didn't affect our relationships. But yeah, it was certainly a hard lesson. It was like, okay, we need to go and we need to study a bit more and we need to get a little bit more understanding of, you know, this whole startup venture ecosystem.
Well, what I love about your story is that you've really taken your zone of genius, something that you were really good at, that you spent many, many hours perfecting and working on, and then you started applying that to venture and applying that to investing in early stage companies. And of course, we all go through a learning curve of how we do that and how we need to maybe dig in a little bit more in the learning side of understanding diligence before we invest in a company. But you were taking something that you've done really well and applying it to a new industry, which I just took a lot of bravery, took a lot of confidence, and took a lot of willingness to kind of jump in with both feet, as you have clearly have done throughout your life. So let's talk about that a little bit. You're a Coffin Fellow. You're a Coffin Fellow in class 25 and one of the most recent classes. So you're kind of brand new in. And at Coffin Fellows, we talk a lot about this VC framework for optimizing success. And that framework consists of really four pillars. One is, you know, radical self-belief and zone of genius. Another is your unique investment thesis. Third is your personal brand. And fourth is the human dynamic sides of the business. When I think of this framework and I think of you as a new fellow, maybe you could tell us a little bit first about, you know, what your interactions were with this new framework. What did you think about it when you became a fellow? And kind of what were your first opinions or first things that you thought of when you were introduced to this framework?
I think it was such a great reminder of how much, you know, work was still to do. You know, by the time I joined Kaufman, I guess I'd had 5 years of being in VC. And to be honest, it was like, wow, this really is going to make me, you know, hone in on these four pillars and honestly just become a much better investor. And, you know, as we've been through Kaufman and we've, you know, taken that deep dive into each of those sectors, I truly believe it's made me a much better investor, because it's kind of, you know, taken what I already know in my zone of genius and then allowed me to think, you know, how does that fit into, you know, these other key areas that will make me a standout investor.
And your zone of genius clearly is what you've discussed already. It's this idea of bringing business development knowledge and expertise, and also networks, really broad networks that many entrepreneurs may not have access to, and bringing that to the relationships that you build. How did that all kind of come together for you when you recognize that there's this framework that actually talks about exactly the things that you're doing? I mean, did you learn anything about yourself with your zone of genius exercise that it's maybe more than that? Or what would you identify as your zone of genius today?
I think my zone of genius is kind of, as you said, it's, you know, my relationships and my deal-making ability. And I just knew, you know, in venture, you have, you know, the CVs, you have the tick boxes. But for me, I think the thing that gave me the confidence to even make the jump into venture was just knowing that I was able to provide something different, and that I was able to provide value, and that to an entrepreneur, that was going to move the needle for them, right? It was, you know, I'm not just writing you a check. Alongside my check is coming, you know, my partner and I's 30-year combined experience of not just the network, but the intimate knowledge on how to get these deals done, right? And I just felt like there wasn't really anyone in the venture space doing that. And that kind of gave me the confidence to jump in. And yes, that's my zone of genius. And then it was, you know, building everything else around that. And I think, you know, it was that radical self-belief that, because if you look at like the data, it's like, oh, you know, you shouldn't be in venture because you don't have this. But it was, you know, coming to the table and knowing I did have something to offer, and that it was going to differentiate us in the market, and entrepreneurs would love it. And that was kind of the impetus for even moving to venture in the first place, when all the data probably said not to.
So Rachel, given your background with business development and how you've applied that to your zone of genius, is there something that you can tell us, or maybe a story that you can give us about how you've applied what you learned in business development to early stage investing?
Absolutely. I can give you a case study, I guess, of one of our portfolio companies. So there was a company called Firefly, which was a smart billboard that sits on the tops of Lyfts and Ubers. It's playing into autonomous vehicles, smart cities, and also disrupting outdoor advertising, which hasn't had any innovation or disruption for years. And so I actually got a phone call from one of my friends in the Valley at a very prestigious firm. And they said, look, we've got this great deal, two great founders, Lightspeed are in it, NFX, the founder of Tencent, SoftBank. And I was like, oh, great. I'm like, well, why are you calling me? And I said, oh, because nobody in the cap table has access to people that control outdoor advertising budget. Do you? And we're like, yeah, we spent, you know, our old life working with, you know, the WPPs of the world, the Omnicoms of the world, the Samsonite teams. We knew kind of the brands and those that would love this. And so they're like, look, meet the founders and see what you think. So we actually ended up meeting the founders. He was super excited because he's like, oh, wow, if you can do this, you can really help my company. And so we invested in the first 4 months. We actually ended up landing him his first deal with like Netflix Outdoor, doing a deal for him with AEG, getting him, you know, partnerships with the WPPs of the world. And he was able to take, you know, those initial case studies and then build a whole team around it, which was super exciting for him. And then, you know, the Series A came along, and Google Ventures actually came in and were like, look, we want to take the whole A round, like a $30 million A round. He actually came back to my partner and I because he knew that we were international and said, listen, I have Google Ventures for North America. I have Tencent for Asia, but I have no strategic capital in the Middle East and Europe. And I know you guys have, you know, strong international connections. Can you help me? And so I ended up getting on a plane and was actually in the Middle East, and actually ended up bringing him back one of the biggest institutional investors into Careem in the Middle East, which was the Uber and then acquired by Uber. So a very strategic ride-sharing investor. And my partner actually did the same for him with the Exor Holding Group in Europe. And so between us, we ended up bringing him $10 million of strategic capital into the cap table for his A round. And, you know, again, it's only because of our background and our past that we were able to provide that to the entrepreneur. And so, and it was something that, you know, the other investors couldn't necessarily provide. And so I think it's just a good example of how, you know, this 30 years combined business development experience can really help an entrepreneur as a venture investor, which I guess gives you an example of how we work.
So Rachel, that's a great example of one of the ways that this has been very applicable to a portfolio company. As we all know, the world has changed over the last 12, 18, 24 months with a global pandemic. And many of the venture investors that have invested in early stage or even frankly later stage technology companies have had to do a lot of coaching and help getting them through how to navigate these very, you know, untested waters. How has your background helped you in doing that same thing with your portfolio companies?
You know, in environments like this, where access to capital contracts, I think, you know, being value add and being able to bring something obviously to the table is different to the table is really important. And so, you know, during COVID, a lot of our companies had to, you know, cut budgets and figure out organic ways to generate growth. And, you know, we have a couple of examples of that. One of our companies was raising money and we thought, you know, why don't we try and bring some strategic investors into the cap table who really care about this mission and vision. And by bringing in the investment, hopefully we'll get some headlines and, you know, hopefully that can help your company grow. And so we actually ended up bringing in, and this was a sustainability company. It's a company called Cloud Paper that does like bamboo-based toilet paper. And this was pre-pandemic, by the way. And we said to them, look, we know that Robert Downey Jr., for example, is very passionate about sustainability. He might love this. So we actually ended up bringing him and Mark Cuban to the table as strategic investors. They ended up, you know, getting the headlines and the investment, and, you know, it caused a real uplift in the sales. And so it's, you know, really leveraging that old network again to kind of move the needle for the entrepreneurs in a time when they need it more than ever.
You know, it's what you've done a great job of, Rachel, is understanding that as investors, one of the things that we really have to do is help connect dots and help connect different pieces of our network to support the entrepreneurs we invest in. And you clearly are doing that in a very thoughtful way by bringing different people to the table that need to meet the entrepreneurs that you've invested in. What a great story.
Thank you.
And bringing this full circle back to where you are today, what gets you jumping out of bed in the morning? What are you doing today with Muse Capital that makes you feel like you are fulfilling your life's mission?
So I think when, you know, when I first got into VC, it was all about, you know, just being very value add on the cap table. But the deeper we get into the journey, you know, the more I understand how broken like a lot of the current system is, especially when it comes to women and minority founders. And we at Muse, we're consumer tech investors, but we have this focus on, you know, underserved markets and communities. And I just feel like there's a lot of press out there on how, you know, female founders struggle to get funding. But when you look under the hood, you realize there's actually a real issue at the check writing level, because only 14% of women work in VC, and I think it's 4% actually have check writing ability. And so if you think of VC like an apprenticeship, there's so few opportunities, you know, if you take that path. You know, we've got to get more people, like more diverse managers into VC. And so it's like a personal passion of mine now to get, you know, talented people that might not necessarily be from the venture space to join. And, you know, and hopefully by sharing my story, I can help with that, right? By trying to figure out what resources, questions, ideas like they might have, and kind of sharing a little bit about my journey, mistakes made, and kind of how to fix that. And so, you know, the deeper I get into venture, the more I feel that what we do is needed. And look, even just by being diverse managers, right, we have our own experiences. We, Muse Capital, we do a lot in underserved markets. So if you think of women's health, you know, fertility, menopause, future of parenting, motherhood. These are actually all things that I've been through, I feel, maybe not menopause, but, you know, having a new child, like having a new baby, and kind of realizing how broken the current systems are and that there's so much room for improvement. And I now feel very privileged to be in a position, you know, where I can write a check to help these founders actually create solutions for these problems. And so, yeah, I really feel like, you know, throughout my career, I was always kind of waiting for, you know, what's my legacy? I know I have something valuable. And by now taking that and applying it to venture, you know, I feel like I found my home. And I love what I do. I love getting out of bed every day. I love meeting these amazing entrepreneurs. I love knowing that, you know, I can bring something that could fundamentally, you know, change their business. And so I love it.
One of the phrases that we use in Coffin Fellows a lot is moving from success to significance, because so many of us in the venture ecosystem, the way that the world would define success, we've achieved many of those kind of, I guess I would say, outward measures of success. Mm-hmm. Thinking about your journey and the future, what it looks like for you, because you're still young in your, you have many, many more years making investments and making a large impact. When you get to, 10, 20, 30 more years down your journey, and you're looking at your life and your journey from success to significance, what will significance mean to you?
Significance for me will mean we are, by investing into, you know, diverse and underserved communities. I just think, you know, our population is getting more diverse by the minute. And if we don't, like, keep investing into, you know, products, services, solutions for this demographic, we're going to miss it. And I want to be at the forefront of that. You know, it's not a charity, it's great business. You know, Kaufman have some amazing stats, you know, on this. Honestly, if I can be at the, you know, leading that or paving the path there, then, you know, when I look back in 20, 30 years and I think, oh, I've made life better for, you know, new mothers, for, you know, older women, younger women, minority groups, then, you know, I'll feel very proud.
I love that. I love that, Rachel. And I'm certain you are going to be leading us towards that version of the future. So I'm just so grateful for you. Tell me this, as you think about things that you're grateful for in your life and the things that we have that we just have to be grateful for, you clearly are grateful for incredible parents, for a mom who was brave and who kind of made the most of her opportunities and showed you what it meant to be grateful for the opportunities that you have, and also for a father that was your rock, was your just kind of your silent rock. What were if you were able to go back to, you know, a younger version of Rachel, what would you say to her, knowing that the things that you know now?
Gosh. Just be true to yourself and know that absolutely anything is possible. Just keep doing what you're doing. Keep working really hard. Keep being authentic. Keep building relationships. You know, if someone had told me that I'm doing what I'm doing today, 10 years ago, I would have not believed them, to be honest. But I think that, you know, if you really set your mind to something, anything's possible.
At Coffin Fellows, we talk a lot about inflection points, and you said that you had this aha moment when you were sitting there at dinner with Troy Carter, where it was like, holy cow, he just opened up my mind to the fact that I can kind of be this connector between networks and capital and people in investing in early stage technology startups. What would you say to those that are kind of that may have some of those inflection points or those aha moments pass them by? How are you able to be very, and how are you able to be very present in those times where you may have an aha moment or an inflection point come to you? Any advice that you would give to those that also experience these, you know, these different types of inflection points on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
You know, you don't want to go through life wondering what if. Okay. I think that, you know, if you're passionate about something, you know, answer that question, like, go for it. You know, what's the worst that can happen? You know, it might not work, but you have this incredible experience that you can learn from and grow from. And I just think, you know, as someone that was always told, oh, you know, you're too young to do this, or you don't have enough experience, or, you know, you don't tick all these boxes, it's just listening to yourself, you know, I guess I knew that I had something valuable that I could bring, and that, you know, if I worked hard, everything else could come or fall into place. And so I just think to anyone that's, you know, thinking about having an aha moment and being scared about, you know, can I do it, can I not, you just got to jump, because if you don't, you'll never know. And yes, it's scary, and yes, there's a big learning curve, but ultimately you'll answer that question. You'll be a better person regardless.
Such great advice. Rachel, you are a Coffin Fellow in Class 25. Where does Coffin Fellows sit in kind of your journey, or what is the being a Coffin Fellow meant to you?
Honestly, it's been, you know, life-changing again for me. I think a lot of people probably feel this, maybe they don't admit it, but, you know, being, you know, coming into Kauffman, you know, was a real honor for me. And you do go in thinking, oh goodness, you're going to be surrounded by all these exceptionally brilliant people, and am I going to be able to keep up? And what's been really incredible about Kauffman is just how much we all learn from each other and the respect that we all have. And honestly, just having this very safe space where you are able to ask, you know, the questions that you might not feel comfortable asking, you know, your industry or your peers, that has been, you know, life-changing for me, certainly as a newer investor. And, you know, having a safe space to go to my forum classmates, my classmates, and get some really solid, you know, stories, lessons, experiences, which, you know, truly have made me a much better investor. I'm very thankful for that.
I appreciate that, Rachel. The last question I'll ask you is, you know, this mini series on the Coffin Fellows podcast is about how to become the best VC investor you can be. Any other thoughts that you have that we haven't gone over about your journey, and maybe advice that you would give to those that are trying to be some of those, maybe those check writers that are non-intuitive or non-traditional, that have come from non-traditional paths similar to you? What advice maybe would you give them as they're thinking about, you know, being one of those check writers?
I think for me, when I was going through my transition, I was just thinking to myself, you know, what could create the greatest impact on the world? And for me, there were two things: popular culture. So, you know, we see how, you know, influencers, and they can just move the needle and honestly move stock markets. But, you know, at the same time, it's technology. So what actually happens if you combine the two, and if you are an expert in both? And so I spent the first half of my career like really honing in on the kind of popular culture, brands, celebrities, influencers. And then, you know, I'm in this stage of my career now where I'm really trying to hone in on the, you know, the venture side, becoming a great investor. And, you know, for me, it's like, wow, when you combine those two forces, like anything's possible. I think my advice to anyone trying to get into venture is, if you are able to provide something, you know, valuable to the VC community, to the entrepreneurs, that, you know, is different to what everybody else is doing out there, then, you know, you can come into this space and make an impact. Yes, there's a learning curve. Yes, you know, and I really hope I can help by providing resources and sharing stories as to, you know, how I bridge that gap. But, you know, as long as you have something different and valuable, I truly believe that you can be a great venture capitalist.
Rachel Springate, you are an inspiration to us, and I appreciate you joining us on the Coffin Fellows podcast. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Jeff.
That's a wrap. Tune in next week for another candid conversation on what makes a great VC investor with your host, the Coffin Fellows.